Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk More Movies, the show where we try and talk about movies, but never talk about anything and everything else. Ooh, I'm your host, Michael Breslin. To my left is...
Sean Cole.
To my right...
Colm Heron.
Right. A few weeks ago, out working, and this caretaker boy came up to me because we were doing wallpapering, so it gets very pasty and messy.
Is this a sad story? It sounds like a sad story.
No. Why does it sound like a sad story?
It was your intonation.
Maybe it's because he's got a very sad cold.
I do have a very sad cold.
He's ready to play left for 3 or 4 days of drinking. Sesh cold like it is, sesh flu.
Well, whatever.
This caretaker.
No, so he came up to me and was basically just, he said, like, oh, just let me know when you're done. So I'll
lock the door.
And currently he's holding a mop and a bucket, and then he just goes, see that air? I'll take an air and clean up out there. It's like, you actually just forgot the word mop, didn't you? he's so confused for like 10 seconds. He's all, see that air? I'll just take an air.
See us here.
My dad is at all time.
He was a very sweet man, though.
We're going on the town. So I was chatting to your mother there earlier, and you're all, what the fuck? And I said, say that. I don't give a fuck. Say that word. I defy you. Say that fucking word.
You know what,
word.
I found that recently, even at 27 years of age, I found that I'm kind of come to stage where I'll walk in the rooms and fucking forget what I went in there for. And just kind of stand there for a bit and look about me, and I go, well,
I do that all the time.
Because Lita says to me that she knows that I don't have a fucking baldy, so I'm kind of standing looking about, trying to look sort of reflective, but I've got my hands in my hips, and he's all, he doesn't have a fucking clue what he's up to.
Sure, yeah. Well, I'm like, before, you don't drink tea, like, but like before you know, there's a cup of tea in front of you, and you're all, oh, it's fuck ass. You're an autopilot, you're thinking about someone else, and then before you know, there's a tea in front of you, oh, fuck, that's handy, right?
Yeah, there's a cold tea in front of you, you're like, fuck, how long have I known that?
Explain to the listener, too, if we do seem to be talking quicker, this is basically the 24-hour version of Let's Talk More Movies.
24-hour?
The 24 TV series, 24. Because we're on a timer, right. We're against the clock. Explain why. Yeah.
Because Shan's ball bag. No, yeah, we haven't recorded in a few weeks now, and if you're a regular listener, you'll notice that this episode has gone up late. So we were trying to, you know, get sorted out, like, oh, we'll record now.
Faster.
Faster. Bibbly-boo, bibbly-boo, and there you go.
Bada-bing, all of you have a leak.
No, so we're basically recording this on a Wednesday. Oh, actually, fun fact about today's date. Wait. Maybe not a fun fact about today's date.
Was this the...
I'll come back to these.
I don't want to spoil it, just in case it is.
Is it the Terminator 2 Judgment Day thing? Yeah, is that today's date? 31st August?
Wasn't that like 2 days ago or
so? I know, that's what I'm thinking.
I think it's not the 29th August.
29th August?
We'll check it out then, we'll check it out.
But I heard about it today, so I'm counting that.
Faster!
But yeah, we're recording this just before we do our film club, so we do have a time limit when we have to be done.
T minus 1 hour 26 minutes to get through this.
Yeah,
it's gonna be very interesting. What kind of people show up tonight?
Aye.
No, what kind? I don't care what kind they are. Just how many?
Aye.
I'll say a bit decent.
I love this.
You see,
around the 6 or 7 o'clock period, me and Mickey have discussed this before. This is the non-committal period where you don't really want to lock down your number. You're like, oh, well, you know, we might not, you know. But then as soon as you see more than 25, I fucking knew this was gonna get crowd tonight.
It's a good show. That's why they're coming from.
There's about 6. I fucking knew this was shit. These boys were off this.
We're showing American Graffiti just in case anyone's curious.
Mr. George Lucas,
Georgie L.
Of Star Wars fame,
a pre-Star Wars George.
El Giorgio.
El Giorgio.
Yes.
Also, there was someone else we had to say about fucking. Nah, fuck it. I don't. We're against the clock. Danger bottle.
Yep.
Danger bottle. Danger bottle is every week we buy a strange bottle of fluorescent liquid.
Hooch.
Hooch.
Booze.
Hooch is liquor. Crazy.
Moonshine.
How many names for alcohol can you say? Go.
Hooch. Drink.
Booze.
Moonshine. Liquid. Commotion lotion.
Loudmouth soup.
Jungle juice.
Roof juice.
That's an elbow one. Like.
Jungle juice.
You know that jungle juice, not wacky wacky.
Breakfast juice.
You can tell my granddad was a pioneer his whole life. Like.
It was.
Okay, so this week's danger bottle is Ruby Blue.
I don't think
it makes sense.
Did the berries Ruby Blue come with a bottle? Is that berries?
Why would it add berries to a bottle?
I don't know.
Fruity.
Mm.
Now,
this is the reduced section.
It was reduced in Tesco from $12.99 to $9.74.
I make it all that shit.
But yeah, this is where it all begins, where passion flows. You will discover yourself in the natural, refreshing, and infusion of mellow Irish spirit and real summer berries.
Can you do a Morgan Freeman impression? Because it'd be brilliant with that.
Experience. No.
That was going too bad.
I don't know, but I could feel myself losing it straight away.
Something's getting away from me.
This is where it all begins.
It's more like fucking Jack.
No. I need a time out one. My mouth's too wet.
You
need a nice dry mouth to the morgue.
If the water recedes, it helps. The water recedes.
That was a mixture of Alan Arkin. That was amalgamation. That's it. Christopher Arkin.
Experience something Ellen beautiful. Anyway, you and the moments with Ruby Blue. Was that supposed to rhyme? I don't know. Anywho.
I absolutely love how dramatic they try and make drinks sound. I mean, what was that? You will find yourself in a dole office.
In an Irish spirit. I'm going to pour myself a little glass because I am feeling a bit under the weather.
Tell people about the cranberries inside the bottle.
There are cranberry berries inside this alcohol 17% volume liquid. It's called Ruby Blue, but it's just a reddish color.
Yeah.
Like, where are they getting Ruby
Faster.
Blue? Faster. So I'm going to try and get a few...
That sounds not acceptable. That is Faster.
He's hurting me out there. Faster.
I'm going to try and get a few bear dogs out, and we can try a wee bear dog.
Will they come
out?
Fuck, there's one straight out the gate. Oh. That wasn't she.
We discovered last week.
Oh, fuck. There we go. Bunch of them. Here. Unfortunately, I have taken most of the drink now.
Saving because all the berries are there.
Do you want a glass of fair for this guy?
No, you two can just drink out of a bottle.
My bottle.
I'm a bit under the bottle. Well, there's an old glass there if you want to use that.
No, that's right.
Did you get a berry?
No, I fucking took me by surprise. I forgot they were on there.
Do you want a wee berry before I drink this?
Did I get my good shirt?
Fuck. Shan's also suited and booted for some reason.
Not my good shirt. Not my good fucking shirt. I wore it every single day. Not my good socks. That was actually nice. Very, very cranberry, which is what you would expect, really, on the...
Wedding was last week, Shan.
I know, I landed a fucking week late. You just rejected my joke from earlier.
Well, no, it was Jill's joke.
It was my joke.
Jill
came in. She was all, and I was also wearing that day.
Pretty sure. It was
I'm sorry, that's fucking leaping.
You're not a cranberry fan?
Ugh. I'm a cranberry
fan. What about that drink?
Try a berry.
No, you're
not. Eat a berry.
No.
Eat it.
I'm afraid not.
Zombie.
Drink it.
I'm vetoing the berry.
All right, Chan, we get the fucking joke. Okay, here we go.
Oh, the cranberry. No,
There is just a bit something a bit off about it.
It tastes like cardboard.
Yeah, I'm going to eat a berry.
I don't mind it, but it just seems like it's probably been lying too long. Mm. What's the berry like? What's the halley like?
That's the saddest I've ever seen.
That was a serious fist drop. It's like Jill's just left him and he's lost his job on the fucking same go.
That was quite nice, actually.
Really? Yeah. Can I have a berry?
It's about to call a violin and an umbrella. I was like, umbrellas for Mickey? No. Violins for...
umbrellas too, like rain lights, you know.
I used to play the... I was going to say, I used to play the umbrella.
Obviously, very, very alcohol soaked. I wasn't expecting that they quite taste like it.
I like the berries more than the drink, to be honest with you.
I think I do too, but still, even the berries weren't great.
Did you ever see the film with Green Berets? No. That's right.
Joe Way plays a gooseberry.
Perhaps.
Faster!
Right,
what have we watched this week, folks?
Who wants to go first, then?
Backdraft.
Big Kurt. It was my mass for a phone growing up.
It's a good fucking show.
I fucking loved it.
I could not figure out how the fuck they shot all them fucking sequences.
During the late 90s, used to be a firm favourite of ITV's late night film at about 11 o'clock. Used to have it on all the fucking time.
It's one of the very first DVDs my ma ever bought. She came back with a stack of about 6 DVDs and Backdraft was one of them.
Good Faster!
You're just saying it after every guy saying it.
Everything Mickey says faster. But I know, good show. It's about a fucking two brothers who are firemen, whose father was a fireman who dies at the start. Spoiler. And I think you say spoiler first, don't you, tomorrow? And then.
If it's at the beginning, that's fine.
That's right. But fucking. And then they become firemen. The one of the bald ones, he sort of looks up to the.
One of the bald ones?
How's the meaning?
You know, they all look alike. That's not racist, that's just the truth. You know?
Billy? Adam?
It's Billy Baldwin. Why not?
Chadwick?
Iggy Baldwin. He sort of looks up to Kurt Russell, who's his older brother, and he's like this fucking amazing fireman. It sounds kind of stupid, doesn't it? But
you're like, an amazing fireman.
You're a great fireman, I must say. But he is a great fireman.
There's no taking away from him.
And it's just like, I don't know. I suppose you'd be doing it for that long that you sort of understand how you. Fire works.
You've been doing it that long. You kind of know the way the fire's gonna go.
No, but obviously, like he knows, like a perfect gas man, and how it's gonna. Is it gonna back? Is it gonna title drop, backdraft, or is it gonna? You know,
what is a backdraft?
Let's see.
I'm gonna take a guess of what I think that a backdraft is.
There's three killings that happen in the movie, and as a result of oxygen getting in there,
cold air rushes into a house that has a fire in it,
aye,
and it creates like a suction or something like that,
aye, and then it blows outwards,
aye.
I think that's what pretty much, and that's the arsonist is using that technique. He's like dousing the room with like magnesium and stuff like this here, and so when it oxidizes them, and when it gets too oxidized, then it kind of blows up. And
so he's creating the perfect situation for a backdraft?
Pretty much. And that's his method of killing. He doesn't have to be there when it happens. And then Robert De Niro's in it. He's investigating all these fire-related killings. Really stupid.
All these backdrafts?
Is he the fire inspector?
I don't know. He's like the internal affairs of the fire department.
The IFF?
He is. But it's very. I watched it in the flat we were in, and it really is.
The IMF, the International Monetary Fund, or it's the fucking
Impossible Mission Force.
Impossible. Well, in the real world, watch the news, Michael. Anyway,
because we had this discussion when I was talking about Mission Impossible before, you idiot.
I'm the idiot.
Hey, because we're talking about films here, not the real world. What are you bringing in,
faster? But fucking that is one of these things where you're like. Visually, really fucking stunning looking. It's directed by Ron Howard.
Yeah.
And just a series of great cast. And then just beautifully... I think his sensibilities are kind of comparable to like Robert Zemeckis or something like that there. I think there's a very similar sort of sensibility when it comes to film. And
big, broad, black and white morality. well shot. Everything's done right.
Everything's done right. It's just classic, classicist sort of filmmaking. Yeah. And they really, like, I mean, they really don't make films like that before, or they don't make them like that anymore, you know what I mean? It's, I mean, at the heart of it, it's just a story between, like, the two brothers. Like, well, one of the older ones is just a naturally good at what he does, and the younger one always struggled to find acceptance, because when his father died, a photograph was taken of him, you know, with the father's hat on, and it became like a Life magazine thing, so he's a bit of a joke. And so it's about him trying to struggle to find kind of meaning and find his place in
his own identity.
Pretty much. And, I mean, that's kind of the heart of it. And then they sort of have this arsonist crime story going through it too, you know. And it's a really good film, like, actually. And no, I would recommend it. It was really good. It's a kind of different action film.
Nice one. This week I watched The Conjuring 2.
Not for fuck's sake.
No, hey, you know what? I really enjoyed the first Conjuring. No. I thought it was actually probably one of the best.
Why are you
films.
Saying Conjuring?
Conjuring.
Conjuring.
The Conjuring.
The Curdling.
The Conjuring. But I enjoyed the first one. What was that? Like, is that 3 years old now? 2013?
Oh, The Conjuring. Sorry. Okay. I can take it back.
But the second one, I don't know if you've kind of seen online and stuff like that. A lot of people have been saying, oh, you know, it's one of the scariest films of the past 5 years. I know that you hear that a lot. But it seems like it wasn't just sort of film boards and stuff. That a lot of the critics were saying it too. And I was thinking, oh, maybe it is. You know, it's getting a lot of sort of momentum behind it. And I was seeing a lot of, like, these kind of memes and stuff I got online about, like, the villain and The Conjuring, which I'll get to later, who looks fucking absolutely horrifying. But you know what? It is creepy as shit. It is actually, if you're judging a horror film on its ability to scare people and unsettle people, then I think it has to be a fucking 10 out of 10 in that regard. Really well made. Obviously, it's James Wan, who done the first one as well. And
Fast 6 as well, though.
That's right. And then Saw. Aquaman too, is he doing Aquaman?
He's doing Aquaman.
Oh fuck, okay. Well, that's actually now. I'm actually interested now. Fucking hell. And then the first Saw as well. That was what kind of how he made his name. But it's based around the Enfield haunting. You ever hear about that? So basically, it was just a poltergeist in this house in Enfield in England, and it kind of became really notorious amongst, like, fucking English paranormal investigators and stuff you get there. But apparently now, like most of them, it was a complete fucking hoax. But a lot of people believed in it at the time. Like, the Daily Mirror really fucking ran with
it. At the start, I thought you said Anfield, and they were just like, they were just haunting Liverpool supporters.
It's that ghost of Kenny Dalglish just. Hey, kitchen! But, it's based around that. It's the same two protagonists. It's the really famous paranormal investigators from the 70s, the Warrens. So it's Patrick Wilson, he's Ed Warren, and then I can't remember the fucking wife's name, but it's played by Vera Farmiga anyway. And it's just about them trying to uncover the source of
it's about the two daughters, isn't it?
It's basically that one.
That's a fucking freaky one there.
One of the daughters, who is about, I think she's around 9 or 10,
Janet,
she's the one that's possessed.
Isn't it Janet on that?
I can't even remember the one's name.
The one she levitates and all?
She's about 9 or 10, and the other sister is about, say, 12 or 13, and she's really protective. There's two young fellas there too, but they kind of fall by the wayside. They're not really as involved as much. There's a couple of scenes where them sort of getting haunted or in danger of being, like, sort of harmed by the poltergeist or whatever, like, sort of ghost is in the house. But you sort of forget it. It's more kind of focused on the man, the two Waynes. Should have had Terry Collette on there, because the man in this film is on the edge.
Terry Collette?
Tony Collette? Did I say Terry Collette? Tony Collette? But
the fact's Terry Collette.
Terry Collette. But it kind of goes, it ticks all the right boxes, and you would say that there's a lot of sort of standard horror tropes. Like, there's so many scenes of Waynes walking down a really dark hallway in this old creaky 70s English drab looking house.
I actually want to see it now if it's based on that, because that scared the fuck out of me when I was a Wayne.
It's based on, it's not even based on that, it's the retelling of the story. It's not even, like, inspired. It's just telling that story. But because the Warrens were brought over from the States to investigate it, and they kind of wrote all their findings and stuff like
there
that.
There was a TV show of that recently just called...
No, it was not a film. There was a film. It was like a really proper B-movie released about 3 or 4 years ago just called The Enfield Haunting.
No, there was a TV show just called Enfield.
Aye?
I think it was just on, like, Sky Atlantic or something.
Because we watched it on... Was it Strange
was that, but True? Wasn't that a comedy show featuring Harry Enfield? No? Sketch show? Sorry.
I'm pretty sure. I don't think it was that long ago.
It's paid for scousers. But they do, though, don't they, though?
No, that's all I had to say. Like, all right.
But I just want to get to I won't really spoil the name or something like that, because the name of the demon who's actually causing like the haunting and stuff like that is actually kind of integral to the plot. And it's sort of a problem that I have with it as well, that'll get there. But you've probably seen it online now of what the demon is and what the main sort of scary ghoul or whatever is in the film.
Just the one that fucking peeks around behind his head?
No, that's Insidious. I will tell him.
By green head.
Have you not seen it online? It's the nun.
Is it the nun?
No, don't fucking tell
no,
me.
You see her like at the very start. You see her, or him. Yeah. You're not really sure what gender this thing is.
I heard about the nun because they're doing a spin-off film with the nun, like what they did with the first Conjuring and Annabelle, the doll.
Annabelle has a wee cameo as well. She's not involved in the plot, but I think they're trying to
just peeks around the fucking corner.
I think they're trying to create a wee lineage because even
she's like Wolverine. She's just sitting in a bar smoking, drinking. So fuck off.
Me and Lena were sitting watching that the other night, and we were like both really, really, really fucking tense. And you know that a film's kind of intense or creepy when Annabelle popping up out of fucking nowhere is like a wee sort of cathartic thing. But I was
like, oh, it's just Annabelle.
Me and her were clinging on to it. So, where's the fuck? There's Annabelle there. Like, I wonder who got her on anyway.
Annabelle's agent, eh?
But I'll not give away the name of the demon. You've probably seen it online because a lot of people have been posting about how this is like the scariest thing in ages and the scariest sort of entity in ages. It's really, really, really fucking great. I think it's one of the first times in a long, long time when I'd be a big horror fan and watch a lot of horror.
You must watch with surround sound.
It is. But it's one of the first times in a long time where even just the general appearance of this demon kind of creeped me out. And I think even that's saying something, because even you look at something like Stranger Things or you look at so many horror films, they're always trying to one-up everything else by trying to make something creepier and more kind of the best or kind of unseemly or unsettling. And this demon, all they've had to do is basically white face with these fucking huge teeth and say like a nun's outfit, but it's simplicity, but it just, I don't know, maybe it's a personal thing for me, but it got under my skin. But it seems like it got under a lot of people's skin.
Practical effects.
Yes, exactly. And, I mean, like, obviously, if they're doing the spin-off, it just shows how much an impact that character's had. And like most horror villains, he or she, because I don't know what gender it is, the demon doesn't have that much screen time because they always say, you know, don't reveal it and then, you know, make it pop out of nowhere and it's always more effective. But even that character alone and the simplicity and just the sort of general design of the character is creepy enough in itself. Never mind Wan's direction, who probably is the best horror director in the world at the minute. He's on like a flawless run, even like we saw and like the first two Conjurings. But
was him did Insidious as well?
Oh fuck, I had Insidious too. Actually, he done the first Insidious.
Guys get confused with that and
Sinister.
Yeah.
Your man. When we were talking, fuck, I watched it recently.
Doctor Strange.
Your man is doing Doctor Strange, done Insidious. But done Sinister. There you go. I'm getting mixed up as well. Faster. And I think it's because they're releasing the same year too. But it's got like an overly happy ending, which I think is kind of earned considering. Usually I wouldn't like overly happy ends at the end of films that are that sort of sinister or kind of scary, but I think it's that scary it's sort of justified because it's
yeah,
so...
Yeah, I mean, Insidious.
It's so grim throughout.
It's kind of like Exorcist. I like that. It's just it's not over. Like, it's just fucking... It's sort of a bit shit.
I like
it's
a bleak ending. You kind of tell because they've built up these characters, the Warrens from the first film, and they're alluded to in Annabelle, and then obviously you've got the second Conjuring now. A lot of people now see them as household names and they know that they investigated a lot of paranormal stuff, and I think that what they're trying to do is they're basically trying to make a series based around the Warrens, and there's definitely going to be a Conjuring 3 because that made fucking shit tons of money. Still trying to chew that, Barry. But I wasn't sure if it was loud or not. Even though the end of the Conjuring is a bit happy, it's not fucking smaltzy or nothing like that. It's sort of earned, but you know that there's someone just not quite right and someone else is going to go fucking wrong in probably like the future films. Also, the only other thing I don't like is when we're talking about that demon who's fucking ridiculously creepy, it's a bit of a Deus Ex Machina or whatever they say. They seem to kind of crowbar on an explanation of how that demon can be defeated at the very end, and literally one of the characters just goes, oh, remember, we can do that, or this is how we defeat this demon, and it literally comes out of nowhere. The character who comes up with how to defeat them, it's implausible why they didn't think of this weeks before, and just wait to the very climatic moment. So I thought that was a bit of a letdown. I thought that could have been wrote a lot better. But all in all, text full of boxes, some really, really creepy scenes. There's also a scene that's kind of becoming infamous with another sort of semi-villain who's haunting the house called the Crooked Man. And it looks like it's done in stop motion. Like, it looks like it's Nightmare Before Christmas or Coraline or something like that. But apparently they've done it with an actual actor. And again, it was practical effects, but it looks mental. A lot of people says that it looks really tacky and kind of brings you out of the film because it's completely unlike the rest of the aesthetic of the film, because it has this jolty thing coming up a corridor. I don't know where to sit with. I'm kind of 50-50. I thought that it did take me out of the film because I was like, what the fuck? This is like, it looks like, you know, Henry Selick has directed this scene and then just fucked off. But at the same time, because it is so fucking weird, it still has an effect. And as well, that the character itself of the Crooked Man is also pretty fucking creepy. But no, it's a really good horror film, which is, and I think that's a lot to be said, because I think out of every genre, personally, I've always thought there's more shit horrors than all our genres. Aye, because 100%. they're cheap to make, and they just rely on basic scare tactics. So I think, I personally, being a horror fan, I always appreciate good horror films, I think, more than usual genre pictures, because, you know, you can usually have a good strike group with all our genres, like, you know what I mean? But there's so much shit horror, but no, it's really good.
Just take you back to the phrase you used, Deus Ex Machina.
How do you pronounce that?
Deus Ex Machina.
Deus Ex Machina. Aye. If it was Deus Ex Machina. But yes, anyway.
No, because there's a game that just came out recently called Deus Ex.
And then well, Deus Ex has been out for years, like.
I know, but the new one just came out, Mankind Divided.
Sorry.
But, and then there's Ex Machina, so I'm just kind of combining the two. But, what does that mean, then?
All it means is that, basically, the term comes from literature, that it means that there will be a resolution to a plot or a resolution to a story that doesn't really seem possible until the very end. Like, a lot of people, which I didn't really see as a good example, but a lot of people point to the end of Toy Story 3, where they're about the spoilers for the end of Toy Story 3, where they're all about to get melted, and then who swings in? They save them?
The aliens.
The aliens?
Because it's the claw.
That's right, the claw.
The claw!
Right, the claw! You take us to your leader. But,
man.
I don't think that's a very good example, but basically it is a conclusion or a climax to a film where usually, well, not usually, where usually the hero wins or comes out on top, but it doesn't really seem plausible or believable within the realms of that story.
Right.
Do you know what? I might be giving it the best definition.
So it's just kind of get out of jail free card kind of deal.
But if you want to talk about your film, I'll get the
It's kind of like at the end of Lord of the Rings when Gandalf rocks up with the fucking birds.
That's probably the best. That's the best example.
Could have saved us three films, like, really. Hop in the back at Eagle.
Hop in the back at and just drop him on the fucking mortar. Like, you know what
drop
I mean?
Drop it in there.
That's a perfect example.
Just
of
drops it in. Mine's a pint.
Basically, what I was saying, the term, pronounce it for me again.
Deus Ex Machina.
I always say deus. Deus Ex Machina basically is a noun which means an unexpected power or event saving a seemingly hopeless situation, especially as a contrived plot device in a play or novel or film. There you go. Every day's a school day, Mick.
Every day is a school day, Mick.
I'm pretty sure we've talked about that before, but I couldn't remember. Anywho.
Did you say for you and I? Shaky fastest.
Okay.
Faster!
Film I watched this week is Batman, The Killing Joke. The new animated.
I didn't know it was out.
I know, I got on Amazon there. You can rent it.
Is it in the movie house?
No, it was only out for like one day in the cinema cinemas.
How long is it? Because usually they
it's only like an hour 15. But obviously The Killing Joke is a big famous comic and it's supposed to be pretty brutal, and Barbara Gordon gets paralyzed in it. I wasn't sure if I wanted to say that, but
like,
kind of for everything I want to talk about, I kind of need to mention that.
Brutalized.
But no, I've never actually read the comic. I just knew what the comic was about.
It's didn't they base or loosely base The Dark Knight on it? No? Or parts of The Dark Knight on it?
I think, I don't know. It's like Frank Miller's Year One, like the Killing Joke comic. I think they're two sort of temples for influencing modern films with Batman involved, like, you know what I mean? But then there's so much source material, but they are kind of held up as being the two best.
I mean, see this thing, with the film, actually, I'll give you more information about it first. It's Kevin Conroy playing Batman, and it's Mark Hamill playing the Joker. Mark Hamill actually said he was done playing the Joker unless they did the Killing Joke, because the strain is too much on his throat. Because if you actually, because I was listening to Mark Hamill talk at the Star Wars celebration. He had his own panel where he was just talking for like an hour, and he does just kind of sound like the Joker now. Like his throat's really raspy and stuff.
You know what? He shouldn't just be worried about the strain in his throat. They should be worried about the strain in his fingers. I dare you, look at any photo on Google Images of Mark Hamill and he's pointing his fingers. I swear to fuck, continue. I'll get a few examples. We could probably wax him up on the Facebook page too.
So Mark Hamill is coming back to play the Joker. Even though, like, he played the Joker in the most recent Batman game, which was only, like, last year, so it's probably balls, really.
He played him in all the Arkham games, didn't he?
That's what I'm saying. The most recent Arkham game, he played him. He didn't play him in Arkham Origins. That was Troy Baker, I believe. But I don't know. So the Killing Joke, the plot of it is, well, it starts off with just a kind of, like, a prologue kind of thing with Batgirl and Batman, and just kind of showing their relationship, and they get a bit intimate, one might say.
They start banging, eh?
It's really hot as well. Even for being animated, like, you're just like, get stuck in beds. No, it just comes out of nowhere, the turn of phrase, but...
Got that right for me.
No, I seen your head fucking twitch as soon as I said it. I was like, and he bring us up.
He's channeling up like a Christmas tree.
It's like a fucking dog and her adorable, just... straight up.
But yeah, it starts out just, we kind of explain in their relationship, and then the overall story is just, Joker is broken out of Arkham and he just has this whole plan just to fuck with Commissioner Gordon, basically. And so it starts off with him breaking into Barbara Gordon's house and shooting her in the stomach, which cripples her, and he takes photos of her, and then he's just tormenting Commissioner Gordon, and then it's just about Batman trying to get him back and help him, kind of. Right. But overall, for the film, I didn't really enjoy it. It was because I've heard, maybe it's like the comic had been built up to me so much, and I heard, like, oh, it's really brutal and stuff, and, like, I was just expecting it to be more way more fucked up than what it was. Mm-hmm. Like, even the bit where Joker shoots Barbara Gordon, she just opens the door, and then he shoots her in the stomach, and it's over really quickly, and it's not really lingered upon. Mm-hmm. And I think I was kind of trying to think, like, why it wasn't working for me. And I think the reason is that when you're reading a comic, you can linger over stuff more, and you're kind of setting your own pace, because you can go back and you can stare at the images and kind of tick it all in, and you can kind of absorb the whole situation, mm-hmm. however long it takes you.
Yeah.
But in a moving animation art form, then the pace is being decided for you.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I just think it moves too quickly, and it kind of doesn't give enough time to kind of linger and kind of really tick on what's happening. It's shocking when when it happens, but
usually if you're reading it, you would just stare at that page for a minute.
You'd be like, fuck, like, they kind of, you would need to kind of take a minute and just be all, fucking hell, what just happened?
You have to be on your toes more, I suppose, we film. Like, it's just a different way of absorbing media, really.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I think, like, because I've watched some other the animations that they've brought out. Like, I watched the Dark Knight Returns one as well, and I think I enjoyed that more. But even in some bits in that air where I knew they were big, iconic moments, when they happened, it just felt a bit flat. And I think it's because
it's very hard to achieve those. We like really like.
I see, because I think they're so faithful to the comics when they're doing these animations. It's more just like a animated comic more than anything. Like, and they're just adding in the voices and stuff. But I think there needs to be a bit more put in. They get the pacing. I think the pace is the biggest thing for me. It's just, do you get that writing, to get it, they feel right, and just kind of create more of an atmosphere rather than just watching moving images.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I've seen this podcast fucking countless times that I think that, for me, near enough the most important thing in any film, it's ridiculous because it's so many different components come together, but I think the most underrated one, or one that people overlook, because I think a lot of people focus on performance or visuals or sound, it's piss. It's getting that rhythm right. It's fucking massively important, because you could have someone that maybe is substandard visually and maybe plot wise is just about fucking engaging you and the performances are alright, but see if someone drags, you'll fucking, even if it's a good film, you'll switch off. I personally will switch off straight away. Mm-hmm. If it starts to linger or it doesn't seem to be moving from A to B or from B to C, I don't know, that's a thing for me. That I think, I personally think that there's so many films out there, even great films, that could do we maybe 10 minutes trimmed off them. Not at all, obviously. But I do think even there's great films out there that could do we something taken off them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even say it's self-indulgent. I just think that, I don't know, it's hard to say. I'm not a fucking huge director. They obviously know more than me. But I'm just, you know what I mean? I do think that pacing is something that could be looked at.
You see, I think even with this here, they could have kind of taken their time over some of the stuff. I mean, because, like, all these animations are about, like, an hour 15 long, so obviously they're held to some kind of time constraint or whatever. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's just, it needs to be that length, but it just felt like in some situations it could have been built up more, or it could have been kind of lingered upon more, or just given more attention rather than just, oh, this is happening and this is happening, because that's just the way it felt, and there's no kind of real atmosphere built up around it.
Which is strange for a Batman animation, which have been lauded for so. I mean, like, I think that Batman the Animated Series is one of my fucking favourite things of all time. I think it was the first animated show ever to be nominated for an Emmy, and it's just, see, for like film noir visuals and just how good the writing is and the storylines, there's about like 96, it's fucking unbelievable.
Many episodes?
96, I think. I used to have every episode, and I fucking lost them. And then you've got Mask of the Phantasm too, which is seen as one of the best animations of the past, I don't know, I can't even remember what was released, but the past good couple of years anyway.
Yeah.
Also, just to go back to that pissing thing, to clarify, obviously it's completely dependent on the story. You know, if you've got a thriller and you want to keep it tight, if you have a big existential meditation on, I don't know, a dock worker, let's say, if it's avant-garde, or it's, you know, then sometimes you might want to let it linger, do a Jim Jarmusch on it. But
another thing as well, just the way it worked out that this came out, and I'm currently playing the most recent Arkham game, Arkham Knight, and actually in that, there's a scene where you basically witness the Joker cripple Barbara Gordon. So I'm seeing the same scene in a video game and in a film, and in the video game it was way more impactful because you're Batman there and you're just witnessing this, but because he's been fucked up by Scarecrow, so he's just seeing nightmares and stuff. So it's just the way that was built up, that you kind of turn around and suddenly just Barbara's there, sat, and then you hear a knock at the door. And you know what's going to happen, but there's nothing you can do about it, kind of thing.
What's the certificate? As the game's 15, was it?
18.
Probably.
What's the film though? Is like 12A?
No, I think.
Killing Joke?
Oh, I think it's probably 18. Like 18 as well.
Is it? They made the film 18?
Well, maybe 15. I would need to check that.
No,
but I think they should. Well, like, in America, I'm pretty sure it's like R rated.
If that's the case, then they should have made it 18 because of the story content. But I was just thinking, for an animated film involving Batman in the States, I thought that they would have tried to dilute it a wee bit and obviously engage the
15,
the child audience. 15. It would have been cool if they would have went for an 18.
You don't see any titties in it.
nobody draw any tits for Mike now.
No, because that's part of the kind of fucked up thing with the Killing Joke in it. Like, when he cripples her, he strips her naked and starts taking photographs of her.
Yeah.
And they allude to that, but you don't actually see it. Like you see him unbutton her shirt and then taking photos.
Imagine Stanley Kubrick directing the Killing Joke.
But you see, that's what I'm saying. Like, from the source material and
Orange, fucking what's as Joker?
Oh fuck, Alex Delarge!
Jesus Christ, that'll be brilliant.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, from the source material and what you know, like, as I said, I haven't read the comic, but I know what happens in the comic. That you could have been way more brutal with, and you could have, it could have been way more fucked up. And all right, might have been just shock value or something, but I think it would have hit harder, and you would have got more of that, more of just what I was expecting from it, because this just, it felt a bit flat. And then the ending of it is just like, these know the ending of the Killing Joke?
No. Nah, really.
Should I say it?
Well, you can just give a spoiler warning.
Alright, spoiler for the Killing Joke if you're ever going to watch
Aaron's
it.
Aaron's got the fingers open. He wants to say it, but speak low, Michael, speak low.
But when Batman's with Joker at the end, and they actually like present these interesting themes of Batman knows either Joker's going to kill him or he's going to kill the Joker. Like, that's a really interesting thing that they never really invest in. But then Joker just tells a joke, and then Batman starts laughing.
Nah.
And it's like, he literally just crippled your girlfriend, mentally tortured one of your best associates or friends or whatever.
It's like, I've always been kind of, not nonplussed, but there's always been a certain stigma I've had about them, and I think a lot of people feel the same, but I think that they were trying to do something different. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think they were trying not to go that the good guy ones, or maybe even they be a bit more cutting edge than the bad guy ones. It's left, not only left up in the air, but it's almost like they would call it in TV shows, like a gay neck ending. Like, it just, the ending doesn't really make sense that much. But I think
a what ending?
A gay neck ending. G-A-N-A-X. Check it out in TV shows. G-A-I-N-A-X. It basically means that an ending which is like completely, not unrelated. I will pretty much, an ending that's unrelated to the rest of the plot, that seems like so ambiguous that you really don't know what they might get whatsoever. And sometimes they really work, because sometimes they're that out there, you think, fuck, what was that about? And sometimes it's a director or a writer just not knowing how to finish their story, and kind of wanting to be strange and wanting to be ambiguous, so people kind of think about it a wee bit more than what they should. But a gay neck sentence, check that out on TV Tropes, which is a fine website.
You can't just make up a word, you know.
Or maybe it's gay necks. There we are, though. There we
maybe
are.
It's Skynet.
Aye, Batman should have killed him in it.
Just saying.
There we are. Shall I give the definition of a gynex ending?
Go ahead.
What do you mean, the end, is the quote that starts at the top of the page. A gynex ending is an ending that doesn't make any sense, or does make sense, but is hidden under enough mind screw to not have an easy explanation. This is usually a deliberate form of mind screw, or intended as a sequel hook to a sequel that was never made. If it's not done intentionally, it's often the result of the creator rushing to meet a deadline. For whatever reason, after watching a gay next end, you won't have any idea what happened. After rewatching the entire series or film, discussing it with all our fans, looking up the meaning of the symbolism, or subjecting the entire thing to a comprehensive literary analysis, you still might not have any idea what has happened. So there you go. That is a gay next ending.
I do probably think the writer of the Kill Joke was going for something. I don't think it is just, I don't want it to go one way, I don't want it to go the other way, so I'm going to do it this way. He probably is going for something.
Aye.
And the fact that it is such a lauded comic and stuff, it might work more on the page. But just, as I said, just the transformation of on the page, they move an image, it doesn't transfer well. And it's just kind of like, no.
Seems to be your main issue with the whole film, really.
I feel like, because... Like, people complain about, like, comic book films and stuff that, oh, that's not the way it was in the comics and stuff. It's like, that's because it's a fucking comic, and comic books are fucking weird, man. And, but for, they go to a film, like, people want a bit more realism, even if it's, like, fantastical realism. It's, you know, it needs to be some kind of sense rather than just, you can't have people asking, like, why would they do that? Like, you need to give some kind of sense to it.
I think especially as well for a Batman film. You can get away with anything like that, maybe, like I was saying earlier on, if it is sort of avant-garde, but what's expected when they have a blockbuster in the ilk of, say, Transformers, or even, you know, perfectly, the Christopher Nolan series. Picture Christopher Nolan ended, like, The Dark Knight, like that. People be up in fucking arms, like.
Some people would probably be amazing.
I would personally love it.
Batman is dead. Warner's made him change it. That is again accident because.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, whatever happens didn't happen.
Yeah.
He's dead.
That's executive meddling right there.
No, but like, I think we...
Well, it's an Australian, he jumped out of that bat plane, fucking, he was grand.
If you look really closely, there's...
the nuclear fallout.
There's a wee black dot just jumping from
the... It's the fucking, what is it, the Crank 2 sequel. He was dead, but he got better.
But you can get away with it in Crank because it just doesn't take itself seriously at all.
Crank's amazing.
I love the two Cranks. They're really good.
Yeah, they're really,
really
good.
Really, really good.
Stupidly good.
I think as well, it's because, honestly, I think,
faster.
No, I do think that it's because the two Cranks are just, they're free of any sort of restriction of realism or even structure. But it's just they can kind of do whatever the fuck they want.
But they're free of criticism as well. Like, if anybody tries to have a go at the Crank films, like, oh, they're stupid. It's like, yeah.
they're
like, oh, they don't make sense. Like, yeah.
They're critic proof, like, you know what I mean? Because you're exactly right. Like, if people say, well, sure, it's shit, well, it's supposed to be. Oh, it's class. I wish I meant it that way. You know what I mean? it's weird as well because they burst on the scene. What the fuck are Neville? Because obviously Neville Dean and Taylor, that was the director.
They've broke up now, haven't they? I think Neville's doing something.
Because I know that Neville Dean and Taylor, they done that, and then they done obviously Crank 2. The Gamer was shite, in fairness.
Gamer's alright.
It's a modern day Ronald Man. I don't like it at all.
Not a bad deal.
They done the reboot, the Ghost Rider, and that was horrendous.
I was really disappointed with that because
the second one.
The remake, I know.
Because I didn't hate the first Ghost Rider. I know it's a terrible offer.
But I mean, like, as one of those ones you like, it's like a guilty pleasure. You know it's shite. Because I thought you meant, oh, you know, I didn't get the detractors.
No, I know it's shite, but just for some reason, I like Nicolas Cage pointing at a tree. I don't know. But then I heard they were doing the second one, and I really liked the two Cranks, and I liked Gamers. And I was like,
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Like, fuck, they just take it really mad and mental and all. And it's like, I was really disappointed with it.
Yeah.
And big dress was in it and all. And fucking.
He was pushing fire at one point, wasn't he?
Aye.
But, well, don't get me wrong, as much as I love big fucking dress, big dress has done some amount of shite too. He's done a lot of good stuff, serious amount of shite too.
He did Losers? That's supposed
to
be bad.
Losers, you know, Bastilde. He done that one with fucking Beyonce that I can't remember the name of.
Oh. Fuck. Wait, Ali Larder as well.
Aye.
Obsessed.
What else has Dross done? He's done a lot. Put this, he's done a lot of crap, anyway. Especially around
is
when
is Bastille
he,
bad?
It's pretty bad.
Someone said to me it was alright.
Especially when he was first breaking into Hollywood after he kind of exploded on the way. He was just trying to get his name out there. Yeah, there's a lot of shit on there.
Maybe he just wanted to get a wee touch of B.
We just a wee grab a B.
Aye.
We grab a B's V. Sorry.
Jay-Z was right.
B's. B's double D's just.
Oh my.
Oh my.
B's V double D's. Ooh.
Cut this, like, but.
this is all in.
Oh, we have not enough time to cut this.
No.
Faster.
No time.
Slower.
More.
More. More.
Aye, so Killing Joke, I was a bit disappointed by it, but give it a watch. If you're a fan of the comic, you might be more into it, but I was left nonplussed.
So you're saying Killing Joke as a joke?
As a fucking joke. Yeah, Mark Hamill should have stayed in his fucking cave.
Aye, point that, boys, instead of going back down.
Okay, we shall move on to topics.
Oh, sorry.
Calm Heron.
Okay.
Faster.
No, I was down the west.
Down the west, Tom.
Down the west,
Fucking
Galway.
fucking got it.
All right, Joe, Ted Bundy of the Wished.
Ted Bundy of the Wished.
And I kind of thought of something that might be fun to do. Because, you know, when we had a competition and it's like, what was it, like the fucking 6 degrees of separation? Somebody just can do that on their phone. And I thought what could be good is, well, if we do it first, where we try and find the best DVD for, or we could have the best DVDs for under a fiver. Like, how many can you fit? Many crackers can you get for under a fiver? Or the best DVD for £1? So, for €14.50, I might add. What do you see as hat list?
Right, this is already over the budget that you set of
in this economy
for a fiver.
But this is I was just buying this personally, and while I was thinking about it, I thought
this is just kicking it off.
This is kicking it off to show what €14.50 can buy.
Just checking it out
in County Clare. In CEX.
Sex shop.
So you've got The Duelists. Anybody ever see it?
Yes.
What happened to it? Let me see that.
It's a film with Harry Keitel and Keith Carradine.
Is it The Jewel just recently came on Netflix? I've been seeing it everywhere.
Spielberg's.
The Jewel, is that side? That's one of fucking...
Spielberg's first film.
No, The Duel. Like D-U-E-L.
Aye. Jewel?
No, it's not. It's a different one.
But let's see. It's Keith Carradine and Harvey Keitel. It's set. Let's see. When was it's Barry Lyndon o'clock.
So Barry Lyndon o'clock. What, 1700s?
Something like that. And pretty much
pre-Victorian things.
I was chatting to the boy in the shop, and we were like, I was saying, I've been looking for this film for a long time and all whatever and all, and then I found it, and then it's about two characters, like obviously in the backdrop of a war that. Have been dueling each other for fucking 20 years, and he's all, what is he, just a really fucking bad shot, or what's the fucking crack with that? Surely one duel, surely the other man's dead. Like, that's all, it's a very good point. Like, I'm assuming there's swords and glove slaps and all sorts of things, but
sure would know him from a crawl.
But anyway, I think it's Ridley Scott's first film.
I am nearly sure you're right.
Best debut film at the 77 Cannes Film Festival. It's based on the novel by Joseph Conrad, who wrote Heart of Darkness, which Apocalypse Now is based on.
And The Secret Agent.
What
film's that based on?
It's on BBC. They've done a period. It's actually, I think it's still going now. They've done a period drama about it. It's a good book, though.
Is that the Tom Hiddleston one?
That's called The Secret Agent. No, that's the night manager, is it?
A secret agent.
And I don't know if it's based on a secret. I think the most secret agent plots are based on The Secret Agent by just, it's like wrote in like the late 1800s.
But there's an actual TV program there.
Faster. There was on BBC, yeah. Go on, Heron.
Anyway,
that was €5, right? That's the dearest of the pile. And
I'm not paying that for that.
I know, but it's very rare. And so I was asking them how the fuck they price and stuff, and I'll tell you later because. Well, I need the last DVD
illustrate your point.
Yeah. And then...
I've always wondered this. I've always assumed that CX price... Now, you can give me the exact definition of it, but you always noticed that sort of newer films, but not quite new films, like maybe 2004 and then like the 90s, are cheap. Obviously, brand new releases are dear, but then really rare sort of sought-after, more artistic films are pricey.
Fetish goods, one might say.
Fetish goods. Especially films that... especially ones that doesn't have a big DVD release.
Perhaps.
Go on anyway.
Perhaps. You might be wrong.
I might be wrong.
You could be right.
But I think I'm on the right trail. I think I'm on the right trail, but anyway.
You probably are right, in fairness. But I just wanted to say that. But next one, Shadow Dancer. Have you ever seen it?
I haven't, but this is about the fucking Provos and Belfast.
Die Arrival.
That's what the fuck Die Arrival.
Clive Warren. And Andrea... Riseborough, whoever the fuck it is. And then, she's the lead.
Just completely dismiss the woman.
No. Andrea Riseborough.
Well, actually, I've actually never heard of her at all.
She's very good in it. Gillian Anderson's in it. Donald Gleeson.
Yeah, Gillian seems they work in Ireland quite a bit, especially
she
does, with a
fall. How she loves it.
My friend is was her driver for the fall.
They get stuck on.
Apparently, no. She's lovely in real life.
She's really fucking sound. his dog died, and his daughter came and said, "I'm really sorry to hear about your dog."
Ah, she also retweeted a mucker of mine who she runs like a, you know her, Claire. She runs a professional bakery stall or whatever down in Belfast, and she sent
Claire, who?
Claire McGowan was in our fallen class. I don't want to give her full name.
No, that's right.
She sent a professional, like she runs a professional bakery thing. She sent a box of cupcakes to the set for Gillian Anderson, and she tweeted her. If that's what the kids are saying,
this one
saying very nice cupcakes. But anyway, continue.
So we've got Aidan Gillen in there.
He's
we've got Martin Mc.
I kind of hate
Martin
Aidan
McCann. Who's the survivalist?
Is that him? Yeah. I still haven't seen that. So
we've got Gillian Anderson, Clive Warren, and then who? What do you call him? He's the fucking lad that tried to shoot Brenton Gleeson.
She a wet allergy for? Sorry, I just want to say it.
What do you call him?
Chaito.
He's a fucking great actor. He was about Comsday, Brenton Gleeson's house. Chaito. And like Yard.
Oh, the ginger fella. Aye. He always plays a psycho. Can never mind his
well,
name.
He's on that dimension. He just plays a sort of regular dude in that. But he's fucking... It's one of these ones he's fucking very good in this.
He must be playing
serious.
A Provo.
He's definitely playing a Provo.
Eric's a Provo.
Donald Hamm and Aidan are all Provos, like.
Yeah.
And no, it's just because it was on Sky a while ago, and then I downloaded it and watched it and stuff. And one thing I really have to say is that it's very sophisticated. It's very like a lot of the decisions of locations and how the story is told is really, it's fresh and it's really good and it's really interesting. And all the dynamics are very interesting. Clive Owen, I think, produced it as well, and there's things like there was a scene made to happen in a jailhouse and this kind of thing and all, and he says, "No, don't take her to a fucking jail cell. We've seen that before. You know, let's just fucking have him take her to like an empty, like a big sort of conference room in a hotel." Even just wee touches like that there, like obviously showing that an expensive hotel, the British government have a floor in it that they take witnesses. They change it up or something like that there, and it all does add things like that there. Do the fucking whole thing. But
tell us this. I mean, obviously, it's best. Journal Troubles in Northern Ireland stuff like that. Is it based on an actual book or is it just fiction?
It's based on, it would seem, fuck all. No,
just fiction.
Right, faster.
Faster, next, it's next based on a novel.
Because,
based
oh,
on a novel.
Jesus Christ, we're down to T-minus 35 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ.
Right, so, right, that was 3 euro.
3 euro.
So we're going down,
Bosh.
Next one, The Van.
Oh, classic.
Call Meany. At the low price of 2 euro.
Oh, wow, that's a steal.
I know.
That is a steal.
Roddy Doyle.
What's that in sterling? About fucking 1.40 or so?
It's fucking...
Well, it's probably about £2 these days, you know what I mean?
Probably about fucking 20 quid.
Probably £2 million.
Probably about £10 million.
Just keep a joke going. Oh, probably about £1 million on
that. Yeah. It's not even fucking available. I don't know what you're talking about, guy. Fucking trillion. Where I know. Lots, I know. So... The Van, Irish film based on a Roddy Doyle book, Colin Meany, directed by Stephen Frears. Next.
Next.
It's a film I've fucking seen. You know,
yes! I've just seen that back.
Hey?
There's a Big Sean.
Big Sean. And it's that cunt from CS or NCIS.
What the fuck's his name?
I don't know. I don't care. I don't watch that show. It's
these were talking about it the last time.
I know, but I was talking about how the fact that CSI is on the fucking title. That's my main reason.
No,
for
but
not watching
we were
it.
No, but no, he's we were watched about LL. An episode.
No, we watched the fucking
NCIS LA.
We watched the LA version.
Because Chris O'Donnell was on.
Cool J and Chris O'Donnell.
Cool J.
Aye,
I'm first name business.
Awesome. Cool.
No need for me to say the ladies love butt, like, you know what I mean.
This is the Presidio.
Presidio.
Sean Connery and fucking NCIS ball bag.
Navy film.
I've seen it. Oh, Mary Grant's on it too. There you go. But it's like a... I'm just realizing it's a military crime film.
Based around the fucking Navy, isn't it?
How does it say? It's a... Lieutenant Colonel Caldwell Connery and Police Inspector J. Austin, Mark Harmon.
Harmon, that's him.
Don't like each other. Not even a little bit. That's because Caldwell helped run Austin out of the military police a few years back.
This is a terribly written blur.
And now these natural enemies are
sounds
forced to...
Sounds like a boy explained it in a bar.
I was like, don't like each other.
Aye.
At all.
Team up, they solve a brutal murder at the Presidio military compound. Okay, that's all we need to say. Is this one of these films?
So it is naval
insane?
Crimes then?
Naval crimes? Jesus, what's it did with this point?
That's his niche.
Mark.
When he got cast in that lead, it was like the biggest joke ever. The boy directed this definitely had a hand in casting him in NCIS 100%.
He never twigged it.
He's like, of course.
I think he walked on the
only fucking role he had.
He walked on the set of Presidio and thought, this is the only role I ever want to play. I always want to be a Navy man.
Clint Eastwood's a cowboy. Fucking, you know, Bruce Wallace is whatever the fuck he does. I'm going to be a naval detective.
You see cowboys and fucking detectives and all his police officers and all, they kind of get their template and they act hard. I want to make a name for the Navy.
Naval crimes, that's the way it is. You know.
Maybe, was they actually in the Navy? It might be a term.
Possibly. I'll check that. Where's Heron?
I don't know if I care enough.
Definitely not, though.
I'm on it.
Directed by Peter Hyams.
Where? Directed by Peter where?
I don't know. Anyway. Just a film, you know, a DVD that you always see. You go, I'm fucking curious about that. And plus, my dad loves Connery, so I thought it'd be something we could watch. Yeah. And got it anyway, fuck it.
You know what's weird too? Like you were saying, the reason you're interested, I think the only reason I watched that because it's on Netflix.
Have you seen it?
Aye.
Was it good?
No. It's literally only reason I watch it is because of the title, because it's got an interesting title. And when you see Presidio? Connery sitting there, Presidio.
Presidio.
It's a prequel to Sicario. No, it's not. Then
next up. For the low price of €1, The Majestic.
Oh.
Jim Carrey, Frank Darabont, director of Shawshank Redemption and the Green Mile. Jim Carrey loses his memory.
Did Frank Darabont direct the Green Mile?
Yep.
Yep.
All right.
Two big prison films.
I did not know that.
Very similar when you think about it.
Hence why he usually gets flagged for it, even though they're both two really good films.
It's fucking solid. But Jim Carrey loses his memory. Fucking wakes up in this fucking town, and I think his pass is that he's a screenwriter, and they strap onto him that he was this guy that went missing or whatever, and because he doesn't know, he starts to believe it. He must bear some sort of resemblance to the guy that went missing, and so pretty much earns the love of this town, and then I think he starts to realize that he's not that guy, and that's where El Drama comes from.
Yeah.
But always wanted to see it. Frank Darabont's gonna be nice and beautiful and. I'll fucking look like Stan Bimmy or something. But there you go. Next up, €1, Good Vibrations.
Hey!
Never even heard it.
The fucking.
You don't know?
The Undertones, the fucking punk music
one. Ah, fuck, I have no interest in the Undertones, even though for my own fair silly.
Well, it's not really about. It's about.
It's about the whole scene, then.
It's about Terry Hooley.
Do you know what it reminded me of, actually, now thinking about it? It reminded me of fucking Killing Bonham. And that was about the sort of Northern Ireland or Irish music scene around that time.
No, but that was about more just one specific event that the boys' brawler didn't get into. Andy Bono.
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 You ever
see Killing Bono?
No.
Sorry.
Right. Anyway, congratulations. been meaning to fucking see it, and being non-Irish, I should have really have seen it by now.
You should be paying more than a fucking pound for it as well, yes.
Fuck it.
Or a pound or a euro?
A euro. There you go. But, you know, pounds. One man's trash is another man's treasure, you know what I'm saying? But Mark Kermode's film of the year, remember I'm saying?
Was it?
Yep. Jesus. And I thought it was class and all. And anyway, that's it. €1. Next up, 75 cent. Hellraiser.
Hellraiser.
Fucking right.
I've never seen Hellraiser.
Neither have I. I just always meant to see it. I worked with a DP of the sequel, which apparently is shite.
How I first heard of Hellraiser is I seen it in the library DVD section. They had all of them. They had up to like 4 or 5 or however many Hellraisers are. Old Pinhead.
75 cent Hellraiser.
Fuck me. Hey. Sorry, I was not blogger.
Any good?
You ever see Hellraiser?
Sorry, excuse me. As a child, yes, I remembered it was a bit of a nightmare fuel one, but I actually can't remember what it's actually like.
It's one of these things that always just it's fucking striking.
It's really iconic. I should probably have seen it.
75 cent, bosh.
Exactly. Why not buy it?
He was on a few music videos, wasn't he? Old Pinhead.
He was certainly.
The very last one.
Mad About Bowling too, sir. Sorry.
25 cent.
25 cent.
You get fucking DVDs in that there. ECX for 10p. Shock.
The
very old team. You can find one for 10p. Continue.
Guess it's 25 cent. Or have you seen it?
Let's say I haven't seen it though.
Guess what?
Is it going to be like a really good? I love
that you said like guess what from the hundreds of thousands of films that have been made. Well, give us a fucking clue.
Oscar winner of best director last few years.
Oscar winner of Best Director.
Last few years, aye.
Slumdog Millionaire.
No.
Gravity.
War.
War. Saving Private Ryan. The Hurt Locker.
Aye,
oh, fuck, you told me about that last night. Take a look at Miss Bigelow.
25 fucking cents.
People seem to turn on that film pretty quickly, though. I don't know.
I fucking love that film.
I think it's a good film. I think if you're looking for, well, obviously we don't know what realism is when it comes to the fucking Middle East, Iraqi, Afghan war, but I think that it made me
pretty much all lies what they told us. So,
exactly. But I think that kind of that put me in the fucking zone more than any film that I'd seen. Like, I thought it was.
It was class. Oscar winner, 25 cents, right?
So tense as well. Also, I think
Jeremy Renner's great though. As well.
Jeremy Renner's amazing. He was nominated for an Oscar for it.
Yep.
But he doesn't seem to be, like, because that's what made him big, and that's what got him into Avengers and Mission Impossible.
Yeah,
and
he's just all fuck y'all.
I know he doesn't seem to be doing like big dramatic stuff. I mean,
no,
like,
he did Bourne. Kill a Messenger.
Yeah,
did Bourne. What was that? Featuring Kill a Messenger.
Kill a Messenger.
It's on. I think it's on Netflix.
No, it's not on.
It's on Sky. What? It's brilliant. It's very, very good. True story about a journalist who uncovers this big fucking drug plot that was put forward by the president. They sell drugs on American soil. They fund a secret war. It's a very, very good film, and nobody believes him. But
the Bourne film wasn't like a big dramatic fucking thing.
No, but it was still a big franchise. They kind of catapulted.
I know, but that's what I'm on about. Like, he's doing big franchise stuff and not doing kind of big drama stuff.
Yeah, that's probably just some personal choice. And as well, I'm sure that doing the Avengers, even if you're fucking like a supporting character in the Avengers. He's probably fucking raining it in, and I'm sure that takes up a lot of time too. I'm sure they're long shoots. Yeah. So he might just be fucking physically exhausted by doing smaller projects. I don't know. He's still young.
I think he's trying to get them to kill Hawkeye pretty soon.
Yeah, it's started out as a joke, but I think you're right. It seems like he doesn't really. I mean, like, he even realizes that Hawkeye is kind of irrelevant to the plot.
He's
like the heart, but.
I kind of like
said
where.
He was the heart in the second one, was it?
I know. I kind of like where he's at, the way that character now is. Like. Because he's important enough that he can kind of come in and kind of kick some ass in the sense of, like, in Civil War and stuff, he kind of comes in and be all right, what the fuck he's doing, kind of wise up and all. Like, he's important enough to have that amount of clout with the other characters that it makes sense, but disposable enough that it doesn't matter if he's not there the entire time.
I think, though, that it'll be a really good idea.
And plus, he just kind of has a nice, kind of, Jeremy Renner just himself. The way he played him in, like, the second Avengers film, he was just really funny and just really...
Casual.
Aye. And it's just, like, there's a bit where...
And not the military sort of guy that you seen in the first one.
Aye, there's, like, a bit where he's, like, walking away from Quicksilver and, he hates Quicksilver. He's like, could have killed him. Nobody would have known. Like, he just has wee funny moments to himself. Like.
It's just going back into sort of Hawkeye thing, too, very quickly. I think it would be a good idea to kill off one of those secondary characters, because first of all, it's just written in good drama. Second of all, I think it would be a massive shock and it would really engage people, because none of the main characters have died yet and none of the main characters are going to die. And then third, like, it wouldn't really make a difference because they've got a big bloated roster of characters already. And I mean, I think they should start to trim it down, because with the universe getting bigger and bigger, there's only going to be more and more and more characters, and sooner rather than later, I think they're going to start to really struggle to find him. I think they've done a really good job so far of giving everybody time and rounding them off. But I think it's going to get tough for them, especially now coming up to the big Infinity War and all that stuff.
But I think they played the death card too much kind of early on. Like, they killed Loki a couple of times and brought him back. They killed fucking Nick Fury and brought him back. They killed fucking Coulson and brought him back.
But see, that's what I'm saying. They should stop copping out with stuff like that and just kill somebody for real.
I know, but, well, they they killed, spoilers for Avengers Age of Ultron, but they killed Quicksilver. But he was introduced in that film. Like, he was kind of fuck all.
But it seems to be their modus operandi of kind of killing someone and then not having the balls to back it up. Like.
No, but you see, I think from doing that, I think people are waiting, like, oh, who are they properly going to kill, kind of thing. And it's just like, for me, like, if killing somebody, it doesn't really impact on me. I prefer to see them work out a way of properly writing it that something happens to them and how they deal with that, rather than, oh, they're dead, so...
No, I mean, that's true. I mean,
I'm bored of killing them.
That's true. You would like to see them sort of challenge themselves and stuff like that. But in regards to Hawkeye himself, or even, I would say, Black Widow, I just don't think they're very interesting characters. Now, fair enough, there's probably a lot of source material there to make them interesting, but do you actually think that they're going to fucking invest the time to do that when you've got Iron Man and Thor and a Hulk they juggle with?
Well, they're not, like... Well, they keep talking about a Black Widow soul. I mean, I think she has enough backstory and stuff to kind of go on that. I mean, all I'm saying is that you don't need to kill somebody just to have the impact of killing somebody.
No, but I'm just saying that is a very cheap way to sort of get drama going. It's the cheapest fucking trick in the book. Like.
I know, that's what I'm saying, but I don't think they need to do that. And you're on about the...
No, I'm not saying I don't think they need to do that, but we're saying if Renner wants out, then fuck it. Why not?
Does he though? Because he went on record as actually saying
it. He's in the first one. He tried to get Joss Whedon to kill him 3 or 4 times.
See, I might just be having a bit of crack with him.
No, he's quite... I like how he's quite a candid guy. Like,
well, I don't know. You know? Because, like, I'm sure if he really wants out, Marvel will let him out. Like, I mean, like, what do you call him? Fucking Agent Smith from Matrix.
Oh.
Hugo Weaving.
He was Red Skull in the first Captain America, and... He said to him, like, he didn't want to come back. He's contractually in there for like 3 or 4 films.
Yeah.
But they didn't bring him back because he didn't want to come back.
That's weird. They not sue him if he signed the contract?
No, because they're letting him go, basically.
So they're actually just being signed about it?
Yeah, they're just being signed about it, that's what I'm saying. So, like, if Jeremy Renner genuinely wanted to be out, I think they would kind of work it some way that to get him out.
I'm probably relieved, though, because there's so many characters. I think it's different with Hawkeye, because Hawkeye is part of the Avengers. Red Skull was, fair enough, it is Captain America's main nemesis, and they probably would have liked to write him in, but with all the intergalactic stuff now with Thanos and it, Red Skull, even if they brought him in, would just fall in the background anyway. And as well, I really liked Hugo Weaving as the Red Skull, and he was one of my favourite villains when I was reading comics, but I think they wasted him. I think that one of the weakest of all the Marvel films is the first Captain America. I think it's alright. I think it sets up the world nicely, and it sets up how... I really like the explanation of how they kind of make him a man out of time.
Yeah, that obviously worked really well.
Really well, because he is obviously the character itself before they done that reboot of Captain America is rooted in the 40s and 50s, and it was a different idea, America's being the big superpower and everybody loves America, but now obviously everybody kind of, I wouldn't say everybody hates America, but there's a way more cynical view towards America, and it's not this big stars and stripes fucking Yankee Doodle Dandy thing that we would have thought years ago.
Yeah.
So I think they've done that well. If I'm coming from this different ideal world or ideal view of America, the a dark one, I think it was, and you know what, everyone was thinking, oh, how are you going to do it? It was actually just, it was a really simple narrative device that they done, but it was really effective.
Right, Heron, so where are we going with all this cheap DVD stuff? Explain yourself.
No, I was just saying that, obviously we had a conversation a few weeks ago about how it's annoying that you don't go to DVD shops anymore. They're kind of, you know, old hat, as they say.
Yep.
And, the only ones you can really go to around these parts are second-hand ones.
Yeah.
Well, sure, it was
or
yesterday.
Tesco.
Just to kind of... I think it was yesterday, the last HMV in the whole of Ireland closed yesterday in Limerick. So there's no more HMVs in Ireland.
Serious?
That is fucking... For a film lover, I'm sure for all this, that's pretty heartbreaking, no way.
What does HMV stand for?
His Master's Voice.
Yeah. It's the weirdest fucking thing.
It's strange. That's why the dog is there.
I know. The dog with the, what do you call it, the record player thing?
Gramophone?
The dog looking at that air is his master's voice. It's
just told you what it's called. Use it.
I don't want to say it.
Gramophone.
That's actually sat on a coffin. And so his master's voice is the dog listening to a recording of his master who is dead.
Oh, really? I always assumed that his master was just too busy watching fucking DVDs.
No, his master... the dog and the gramophone is sat on top of a coffin.
I've never seen that image.
Yeah, I have a wee plaque of it on here.
I've always just seen the dog and a gramophone. I've never seen the fucking coffin.
Yeah. It's on a coffin.
What a, like, sort of abstract and dead fucking icon. I can't always got the dog as master's voice. I always assume it's because his master's too busy away... watching or listening to shit? That's mental.
His master's dead.
Oh, fuck me.
Anyway, sorry, continue.
Who's feeding that dog? Like? How's he lasted so long? Go ahead.
Sound, feed the dog. No.
Faster. He's at a funeral, so probably people feed him.
He's not even real. It's a character.
Egg sandwiches.
And there's back here. What do you call it? No, I think I was going to say, just we might try and do it. Not, maybe not over the next few weeks, but if we can try and find the cheapest and best DVD. What do you think is the cheapest and best out of these? I mean, Hurt Locker, Oscar winner, bam, I don't know.
That's pretty good.
Pretty.
Do you know what? Not only because it's the cheapest, but for the quality of the film, I would say that the Hurt Locker stays at 25 fucking cent. That's
hard. But if because, you know, obviously with the 6 degrees of separation, people can just fucking cheat. I would say if any of the old listeners fancy doing it, you have to show us a receipt. You can't just fucking...
Not even show us a receipt.
Oh, yeah, that's for a fucking penny.
No, hey, that's for a penny up all week.
I would say if the price is on it, then... Take a photo of it and the receipt as well.
And a receipt.
Right. Just take a photo of it and the actual
shop. And we'll vote in about, I don't know, say 2 months. What is the best, cheapest
DVD?
We'll
vote at the end of October.
What
the best cheap DVD is.
Aye.
Do you like that, Mickey?
And then what do they get?
Or see,
our master's voice, do you like that?
See, this is too easy because that's 25 cents. What about the best collection of DVDs for under £2?
Yep.
What about that?
Yeah.
It's tough, man. It's tough.
It's tough.
It's pretty good, though. No, but it can be done. Be done.
For fucking £2, I get Hurt Locker, Hellraiser, and fucking either Good Vibrations or The Majestic.
Yeah.
That's pretty fucking good, like.
Fair enough.
So there you go. Best collection of DVDs.
Under £2.
For under, well, £2 or under. Send them in by the end of October.
Don't send them the DVD.
This is just our plug to get followed.
I just get free fun.
Send them pictures of the receipt or send them pictures of the actual DVD pre-purchase, because it could be doctored always pre-purchase. And then
well, I don't know. Nah,
pre-purchase?
They're going to receipt.
Post-purchase? they could just make labels, like, you know what I mean?
Post-purchase.
Post-purchase.
I know, we're going. I challenge you to do it too. Best.
DVDs
for under £2.
I'm off this competition, obviously.
Yeah, if we don't do it next week, you can really bide your time. You know, I've got a good 75p1, but I feel there's a better one out there.
I have a good £1 downstairs.
Yeah.
I got source code for 50p1s.
Ooh.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. No, yeah.
It's not bad.
We can discuss who has the best DVD collection for under £2.
Okay, let's move on to recommendations. I will go first. My recommendation is The Lobster.
Oh, when did you watch it? Did you watch that recently?
Just came on Netflix, yeah.
Did it? Really?
Netflix has been hitting out of the park recently. Right, I mean, Creed just came on Netflix.
See, I haven't had Netflix for about 2 weeks, so I don't know because I forgot to pay my bill, which is only £6 a month, which is ridiculous. But I was complaining for a month. Oh, actually, no, it was really nice. Cheers. But then...
£6.
I do want to get reset because I fucking love Netflix. Like, it's just so handy if you don't know what you want. But I was complaining for... that's typical. I was complaining for months that they were only adding old shit or they were adding stuff that nobody wants to watch. And now it seems like they've added Creed and The Lobster and what else?
There are others. Yeah, The Lobster. It just came out last year, did it?
That's mental, actually. It was released in festivals at the end of last year, but it was only released in England in March, I think.
I'm nearly sure it was released
5 months ago, but anyway.
But yeah, it's Colin Farrell and Rachel Weisz, and it's set in this... I don't know if it doesn't really specify a time period, so you don't really know if it's in the future or the past or whatever, but...
It feels like the future, but I really like... about the film, that it's really its own wee sort of world. It's sort of surreal wee world, but not overly surreal. It's a normal world, but how people go on is so sedate that it feels like something has happened in the world. They make people, I guess.
Yeah. And so the way the world works is if you aren't in a relationship, you get sent off to this hotel and you spend so many days there.
What's the switches? No, I'm
you spend so many days there. And if you don't find a partner within your set amount of days, then you get turned into an animal. And so when Colin Farrell gets there, because Colin Farrell's wife recently died, so this is why he gets sent to this hotel, because now he's single. And his choice is a lobster, because they live over 100 years, and he had all the reasons as well, but he had really thought it out. Like.
Was it that she died? No, was it not that
his wife left him? I think that was it. Fuck me, right? But yeah, so it's I don't really want to say much more than that plot wise. It's a very strange film. There's really funny moments in it. There's really fucked up moments in it. All the people talk in a very strange way. Like it's nearly kind of robotic and nearly like they're all just constantly nervous about something. It's like, oh hi, I like cheese. Do you like cheese?
Yeah. I noticed that they all talk like Jack D. It has deadpans they love, but they're all very sedate.
They all have a fucking stupid laugh as well.
Does he even
Jack
laugh?
D or sorry, who am I?
You're like Jimmy Carr.
Jimmy Carr.
he can do it better.
Fucking day.
Anyway. But yeah, so everybody goes on the same kind of way, and so some of the comedy stuff in it, like there's this guy who has a lump, and it's his wife died. Maybe that's what I was saying. His wife died, and he says she had a lump as well. And then Colin Farrell's talking to him, and he's all like, "Oh, did you see that girl out there? She has a lump." And then the guy's all, "Sorry, no, it's just a sprained ankle." There's really just fucking weird fucking class. Funny
it's,
bits
it's completely like, abstract.
It's really fucking strange.
Also, the director's name is lovely to say, just rolls off the tongue.
What's the director?
Yorgos Lanthimos.
Oh.
Yorgos Lanthimos, that's fun to say. Yorgos Lanthimos.
But,
Francisco. Or was it Francisco?
Francisco Sonsini.
but after watching it once, like, it feels like there's a kind of deeper meaning to why the world is like this and why the people are going on about it, but I think it would take a lot more kind of viewings of it than maybe a smarter brain to kind of figure that out. But I enjoyed it just for the weirdness and the kind of fuck-uppery of it. But I'd say it's not everybody's cup of tea, but if you like kind of dark comedies, and if you just like Colin Farrell, and Rachel Weisz is actually amazing as well. I really liked her.
John C. Reilly?
John C. Reilly as well, yeah, he's good.
Ben Whishaw?
Ben Whishaw, that's he's the lump guy. Yeah. But yeah. No, yeah, it's really funny and weird, and give it a go if you are
faster.
Mentally stable.
My recommendation is Only Lovers Left Alive by Jim Jarmusch, 2013. Nice. Love Jim Jarmusch. Basically it's a vampire film, it's not really a vampire film. It's about these two vampires played by Tom Hiddleston and Tilda Swinton, who have been like married and deeply in love for about 200 years, but they live in different parts of the world. One lives in Tangier and one lives in Detroit, like really decrepit Detroit. And
alright, don't just that's
what I mean, like, that's a sure description. Like really decrepit Detroit.
In fairness, it is the truth. It's actually America's fault. But basically, he is like this tortured, sort of suicidal, sort of Byronic hero artist, and then she's just a sort of happy-go-lucky, fun-loving vampire. And they present like drinking blood as almost like drug abuse and stuff like that, and they don't actually kill people because they see it as inhumane, and it attracts unwanted attention. And it's cool as well because they only drink pure blood that they get made from in a lab, because all like draining a human is frowned upon in the vampire community. Because, like, most people, they call humans zombies because they don't know. Basically, they're just kind of walking through life and not experiencing it the right way. Like, human blood is toxic because all, like, the bad foods that they eat and, like, all the pollution that they're taking and stuff. Which is, I think, a pretty good point. Like, I cannot, not even subtle, but a really effective point about, like, how humans live. And it's just, like I said, it's not really a vampire film, but they use two vampires and a sort of vampire narrative. They make points about the larger world, like, you know what I mean?
Although when the girl she eats what do you call him?
Oh, it's Anton Yelchin.
Ian. And she's like, oh god, what are you, a musician? Really? And a musician, you know? It's like oh, they're bound to be fucking bogging. That's what he should say. Like,
Tom Hiddleston walks in and he's all, you've ate Ian. But it's
is
a company.
Mia
Wasikowska, isn't it? Oh, who wrote it? No, Jim Jarmusch and directed it.
What do you call the sister? She's in
Mia Wasikowska.
No,
from Alice in Wonderland. That's her. It's Ava, the sister.
Are you sure?
Yep, from Oz.
She's
great.
I thought
she was one from Killing Joe or Killer Joe, no?
No, it's Mia Wasikowska. She just looks really different because of the hair and stuff like that, but it's right. 100% her. Right. But I was kind of focusing more on the comedy, but the whole thing is, like most of Jarmusch's stuff, who's seen as one of the godfathers of modern American independent cinema, is there's the typical directorial traits, there's the long, unedited sequences, and there's just kind of this musing on art and the consumption art, because a lot of the talk between Tilda Swinton and Tom Wilson's character is about art, and they kind of joke about it too, and basically just trying to be creative and live in a world with art. And Jim Jarmusch has always says that if you want to live, then just kind of consume everything that's around you artistically and culturally. And I think that this is one of the films that kind of he's done that hits that in the nose more sort of or less subtle than others. And it's just a really good, and it's just really interesting because it's a comedy involving vampires that's really about the consumption of art and just wanting the love, as opposed to vampire films which are about murdering and all that, correct?
I like how, sex. Because they've lived so long, that they were essentially four or five famous characters. so like John Hurt was Shakespeare. Like, this guy thinking all he talks about how he's all, Jesus, he would have played a great Dane. That's why I based him on, based Hamlet on him. That's kind of hanging on.
There's a crack or two where stuff it, Tilda like. Swinton, says they Tom Hiddleston. He's all, oh, well, Christopher, who's played by John Hurt, was one of your heroes, and he's all, I didn't have any heroes, and then there's just this cut to a wall with all these pictures of famous people, but it's all these, like, sort of really refined artists, like, you've got, like, Byron and Mary Shelley and stuff like that, and then just that corner's Rodney Dangerfield.
It's his sense of humor, it's so weird. It's like a less overt kind of Wes Anderson sense of humor sometimes. Aye. It's brilliant.
So, Heron, what's your recommendation?
A Time to Kill. Do you like it?
I just watched it like 2 days ago. It's always on Film 4. Always at.
It sounds familiar.
It's John Grisham book. It's Matthew McConaughey. And it's got Sandra Bullock, Samuel L. Jackson, Donald Sutherland,
fucking
Kevin
amazing,
Spacey.
Chris Cooper for a wee scene as well.
Chris Cooper.
I know this film.
And it's Kiefer Sutherland as well. Oh, and fucking Red.
And Donald?
He's
raving on there.
He is. Who actually makes a great cameo on Backdraft, by the way. Donald. He's the fucking weird guy. But, it's John Grisham. I mean, every so often, you kind of get in the mood to watch a courtroom drama. But John Grisham is one of those are always kind of set in the backdrop of some kind of political or, I don't know, political corruption. Or political point being made or whatever, and this one is Samuel Jackson's daughter gets raped by two white lads, and essentially Matthew McConaughey comes to try and prosecute them, but the night before the prosecution, Samuel Jackson hides in the courtroom, and in the morning he goes and shoots them in public, shoots them dead, and so then it becomes Matthew McConaughey's job to get Samuel Jackson off, saying like diminished responsibility, insane, and this kind of stuff. And Sandra Bullock comes in there because she's just a sort of a rich kid who is interested in law, and she sort of helps and stuff. And then Donald Sutherland is the guy who taught Matthew McConaughey how to be a lawyer, essentially. And it's just a simple enough plot. He just, you know, when songs have a good hook, he's already kind of got a great couple of hooks in there for a good plot, and then all he has to do is, I suppose, make points about another fucking great and underrated actor, Oliver Platt.
Because the cast, I always forget he's a really small role, but he's still in there.
He's
like,
amazing.
He's Oliver Platt.
He's always playing that the fat snubbling, but he's in like Lake Placid and fuck what.
He's Porthos in The Three Musketeers.
He's been in Chef. He's the boy who writes the bad review about, John Fashnu, ex-footballer. About John Favreau and Chef.
Haven't seen Chef.
All right, okay. That's brilliant. Well, that's a nice start.
Have you seen Love and Other Drugs?
No.
Actually, here, the fucking, the first show, he's a Fargo. He's the big fat boy and was a supermarket.
All right.
I knew we'd get there eventually. He's written a lot of stuff.
Well, he started off with a fucking Lake Placid reference.
Yeah,
I'll concede that. But it's one of these films that are sort of just when I was younger. I mean, I've probably seen it a few times since I was 16. It was always on at some point. It was one of those big films at the time. But then it's the case that sort of divides the city and stuff, and the Ku Klux Klan come into it, and then Black Rights come into it and stuff, and then like Black Panthers come into it and stuff.
As they usually do if the Ku Klux Klan are about.
No, but it's I mean, I think he uses the vehicle of the story to try and make a few points that he's interested in, or rather, he uses the politics of the time to try and make a really good thriller. Yeah. So it's one or the other.
Either or.
But I mean, that's
the insult.
He's made his name off writing thrillers, so it's probably the latter. Like.
I suppose that
I don't know what you're doing, but I know you're doing something.
I don't know what you're doing, but I know you're doing something. Aye.
That time period too, because obviously there was just so much like injustice with like blacks and whites. It's such an easy narrative like time period to set something on, especially if you're going to write something around that. One thing I did, and just because I watched it there, the only like a couple of nights ago, because it's literally always on fucking Film 4.
Strange director as well.
It's fucking. It's not Schumacher.
Schumacher.
I thought that. Considering what he's known for.
But Joel Schumacher is a few episodes.
He's got a couple of fucking headers.
I think he's
a very underrated fucking director.
Tigerland as well. One thing I would say though, I just want to see if you agree or not. No, you. Obviously, pardon the pun, because it's about black and white communities, but did you not think that the morality, which is nice to see in it, isn't that black and white? Because they show McConaughey as flawed, because you see him as this sort of, at the start, idealistic, sort of moral attorney, but then he has that conversation with Bullock, and he's all, well, if I had the chance, I would have killed the both of them. But then you obviously see with Samuel Jackson.
Do you agree with the death penalty?
Aye.
That's what I'm saying. It brings up all these things where they have conversations about it.
But then Samuel Jackson, seen as this grieving fella who kind of turned vigilante and obviously killed these two boys who kind of ripped and tried to kill his daughter.
Into your own head.
But then he's fully fine with it. So like, there's a lot of questions there. It's not just like, oh, the good is good and the bad is bad. It's grey. Like, it's cool.
I think he says one of the things that it keeps you interested is because McConaughey said that the night before he did it, he said, I'm going to go down to the courthouse and kill him. And I said, and I didn't stop him. One, because I thought he was joking, and two, because if they did that to my daughter, I'd do the same. Yeah. And he says he feels like he's responsible for the death of these guys, and that's what kind of brings him to the case. And I just think it's a very well made, again, it's a classicist kind of film, but very good show. Very, you know, not easy. Not an easy watch either.
Aye.
No. There's some tough enough stuff in it, like, but it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, we'll wrap it up there, folks. Thank you so much for listening. If you like getting in contact with us, let us know what the cheapest DVD you've ever bought is.
Well, no.
No. I'm not saying as a part of the competition. I'm just saying in general.
Boom.
All right, fair enough.
You can find us on Facebook, Let's Talk More Movies Podcast. You can find us on Twitter, at Talk More Movies, or you can email us, letstalkmoremovies@gmail.com. You can leave us comments, reviews on iTunes, Acast, whatever podcast service you like. I've been your host, Michael Breslin. Shanko has been Shanko.
Hey, hey.
Calm Heron's been Calm Heron. Episode
66, baby.
I fucked up 65. I was like,
spooky episode.
Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
You know what? Usually we end with saying something stupid or something irrelevant to each other, but I want to congratulate all three of us because we've done that bang on time. It is bang 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock, aye.
To Bannigan's.
Aye.
And podcasts. Boom.
Yep.
I'll take pleasure in getting you, boy.
I'll take pleasure in getting you, boy.
I like it only takes like 10 minutes and he's all,
boy.
Right, we...